So, hey everyone, welcome to the 14th episode of Earthwind Podcast, where we engage in conversations with several environmental and social justice leaders from around the world. I'm Komal, and I will be the host today. So for this podcast, we are joined by Zinachi and Emma, two young climate activists who undertook an extraordinary journey to Antarctica. So let's dive deeper into the experiences, learnings, and much more. Firstly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Would you like to add more to your introduction, something that would help our listeners to know you better? And telling a fun fact about yourself would also count.
Sure. So my name is Zinachi Artis. I am a climate activist based in the United States, and I'm a founder of a youth climate justice organization called Zero Hour. And I am also a founding member of the Global Choices Arctic Ice Force, and recently returned from an expedition to Antarctica in March last month.
Yeah, so I'm Emma Wilkinson. I'm 24 years old. I'm based in London, and I'm part of the Global Choices Arctic Angels Network, which is a youth-led, intergenerational and international action network focused on driving action on the polar ice crisis. And yeah, I also joined Zinachi on the expedition to Antarctica with the 2041 Climate Force team last month.
Thank you for introductions. So since today we will be diving deeper into your experiences in Antarctica, right? So would you mind sharing with us how this journey started and when this journey ended, like when you returned, and how long was this journey?
Yeah, so the journey to Antarctica itself took place in March, but truthfully, the journey really started long before that. And for me, that started when I applied to the competition that Global Choices was hosting for a spot for a young person to join the 2041 Climate Force Expedition. And I applied to that. I saw it on social media and was able to do the interview process, which Emma was a part of and leading for Global Choices. And that's where my journey began. And after winning the competition, I continued to fundraise and continued to get ready by getting my gear, preparing for isolation and COVID requirements and travel and all of that, all in the lead up to the actual journey down to Argentina to get on board the Ocean Victory to travel to Antarctica.
Yeah, I also had the same thought with the question that the journey began much before we actually started journeying to Argentina, running the competition. I think there were over 130 applications from 49 countries around the world. And I was leading on running that with two judging rounds, and Zinachi was the winner of all those people. And there was a lot of preparation that went into the expedition. But yes, we set off in mid-March and returned at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm. That's actually so fascinating to know that Zinachi became a part of this expedition through winning a competition. So my next question will be specifically for Zinachi. What were your expectations from this journey, and how has this journey helped you in achieving your goals?
Sure. So I think that the expedition really exceeded my expectations, and I didn't know what I was getting into at all. So I just saw on Instagram that Global Choices and the Arctic Angels Network was hosting this competition to go to Antarctica. And when I thought of Antarctica, I thought about the South Pole, the ice sheet, this vast, barren polar desert. And that is not at all where we were going. So we traveled to the Antarctic Peninsula, and being there was incredible. There was such diversity in wildlife. The people that we went on the expedition with were from all parts of the world, all different ages, and all working on different areas of sustainability and climate work. And that was incredible. And it was a space that we created down in Antarctica where we fostered solutions, cross collaborations among different people all around the world, while also being in an environment that is so remote and different from anywhere else on the planet. So being there really did help me gain perspective and understand what we're fighting for and really ground myself in the work that we do for advocacy for climate justice.
Okay, so like redirecting this question to MIU too as well, what were your expectations from this expedition?
I think in terms of my expectations, it's difficult to say actually, but the expedition definitely exceeded them. I expected to be around lots of like-minded people and to definitely be struck by this environment, and it hugely exceeded that. The people on the ship, from CEOs to policymakers to just leaders within their field, were all incredible, and it was really a truly collaborative expedition. And those relationships and those connections are definitely one of the most impactful things for me, and all of the learnings from those people, from how they're being a game changer in their field to their firsthand experiences of the climate crisis in their local communities.
So now I do know that you wanted to drive awareness about how polar ice crisis will have exponential impacts, and so it must be prioritized, right, in the global climate action. But what specifically made you guys want to address this issue? What was your motivation behind this?
Well, I've always had a passion for ocean conservation, and my journey really started with my environmental work when I was 18 years old. And well, it probably started when I was a child because I spent a lot of time in the ocean with my family. But yes, my work within this field and this sector began running a marine conservation project in Kefalonia in Greece. And so I've always had this passion, which has been a thread for me, as well as also supporting other women. And that really led me, along with a curiosity for the polar regions that developed through my master's, to find myself as the coordinator of Arctic Angels, advocating for the protection of the Arctic Ocean. I think also having that awareness and that knowledge when taking a systems approach, that what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic, and the importance of the polar ecosystems for global climate stability, and how inextricably the Arctic and the Antarctic are linked.
And what about you, Sinachi?
Yeah, so for me, I also grew up on the coast, and I grew up in Connecticut in the US, and was always fascinated with our oceans. And also there's an aquarium in Connecticut called Mystic Aquarium that is a research facility for marine life. And at the aquarium, they have a beluga whale tank. And I was always very fascinated with the beluga whales, and just thought of them as such awe-inspiring and incredible beings. And in the wild, they inhabit the Arctic. And so I was fascinated with learning more. I started studying climate science and environmental studies at my university and learned more about sea ice and why it's so important, why our poles are so important as regulators for global climate. And also for Indigenous communities living there, why a stable climate is so key for traditions and subsistence and all of these things that people rely on in the high north. But also for Antarctica, thinking about how all these places are interconnected. And like Emma said, what happens in the polar regions does not remain there. We saw that in the US with impacts from the polar vortex in Texas, where there was a great freeze in one of the southernmost parts of the US because of changes to climate in the Arctic. So that's what makes me want to address this issue and really frame reducing emissions in the lens of protecting these places that are so remote for so many people.
Mm-hmm. So well said, because everything is somewhere connected, and but like one thing will impact others. That's so well said. And so for as for this journey to Antarctica, it was guided by Robert Swan, right?
Yes, it was.
Oh, so how did it feel to be guided by such an experienced person? And while you were also on your own journeys, on your own paths of discovering the truths of Antarctica?
Yeah, so Robert Swan OBE was the first person to walk to both the South Pole and the North Pole. And it was incredible to meet him. I actually had the chance to meet him first at COP26 in Glasgow a few months earlier, and then again when we got down to Argentina. And he is an incredible storyteller and has been doing this for a long time and shared so much about his journeys, which are really fascinating. So he actually went to the South Pole at the time that the ozone layer was deteriorating in Antarctica, and experienced the UV radiation that came with that, and was part of sounding the alarm on addressing hydrofluorocarbons in refrigerant, and using that platform to address the need to actually protect our ozone, and carrying that into today from decades later, the understanding that what we do at home has such great impacts for everywhere else in the world, and particularly our polar regions. So framing that with fossil fuels and industrial animal agriculture. And what was so great to hear from him was that he was an example of how intergenerational this movement for climate justice and a transition to renewable energy can be. And he brought all these people together from all around the world, in all different industries, because he recognizes that this is an intergenerational issue, and that there is so much potential for everyone to take action on it wherever they can.
Mm-hmm. Arjie said that so well. I think hearing all about Robert's ventures was incredible. He's very honest in his storytelling, and he's funny with a good humor. And yeah, it just felt so humbling and quite profound to be hearing his story in depth in person, but also fun and uplifting and positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So like just talking about impacts, so what was your first learning about climate crisis in Antarctica?
So I actually, I think I learned about this in college, and I talk about a lot that it's actually such a big problem that for so many people, environmental education comes very late in people's lives. And for me, that was in college. So I took a course on glaciers and climate change with Dr. Samia Mustafa, who was a visiting professor at Brown, and learned about sea ice extent and changes to Antarctic sea ice extent as reported by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and learned about how drastically sea ice extent has declined annually for the past several decades, both in the Arctic and the Antarctic. And I never even understood the importance of sea ice before that. And for me, I had always wondered, like, I was taught that ice in the water, if it's already in the water, it doesn't contribute to sea level change because it's already in the water. So why do we care about sea ice if it's melting and it's not causing sea level change? Well, it's critical. It is an ecosystem support. It supports albedo and reflection of heat and energy off the surface of the planet. And sea ice helps as a buffer to runoff and ice shelf support for glaciers. So sea ice is critical for global climate regulation and for supporting ecosystems in the polar regions, which also supports wildlife everywhere else on the planet. So that blew my mind because I had no idea that sea ice was so important. And it's this thing that no one would think about in their daily lives unless they live in a region where this actually occurs naturally. But for me, I grew up on the coast my whole life, but there's no sea ice. And so part of this expedition was really bringing that home to people and making them understand that sea ice and the polar regions are so important to all of us in our daily lives, even though we can't see it.
I think for me, like I mentioned before, my main learning actually there while in Antarctica about the climate crisis, because I've been working in the polar advocacy space for a while now, I'm aware of how the polar ice impacts us all, each and every one of us across the world, and of these events like the Texas polar vortex freeze that Zanardi mentioned. But I think the main learning from me was from the other participants, their experiences, particularly of environmental injustice in their communities. And that was, yeah, incredibly impactful. A lot of the stories and individual experiences and how those individual experiences differed and were also the same around the world.
Mm-hmm. So what would you term as the most shocking discovery? Something that you learned while you were on your journey to Antarctica. Something that you never thought it would be, but it was how it was.
I think the first thing that springs to mind here, which isn't necessarily a shocking discovery, it's just not something that I knew and I was really amazed by, and it's that whales sleep with half of their brain. So we were out on the Zodiacs one time, and we were with these whales for, I really don't know how long it was. Sadaji, how long do you think it was?
It must have been like 15 or 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
On the water, yeah.
Yeah, I lost track of time, but we were with them for so long and they weren't necessarily like diving up and down with their tails flicking. There were a few, but they were really just quite still and kind of bobbing along, and they were, we think, asleep. And yeah, they sleep with half of their brain so that they don't drown, which I thought was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think also another wildlife thing, not necessarily climate, but I thought that it was so fascinating to see all the penguins. So when we were there, the penguins were molting, which is essentially sort of like shedding their feathers. So they're growing a new coat of feathers. And while they're doing that, in the molting process, they can't dive into the ocean because their new feathers haven't been waterproofed yet, and they're sort of getting their new feathers grown, and that also means that they can't eat at that time. So all these penguins were sort of molting and getting ready to get their new coat ready for the winter, and that was so fascinating to see animals just in their own environment, and the real reality of ecosystems in action.
Mm-hmm. So it was about wildlife, right? So now, like, I'm just so curious, what a day in your life looked like when you were in Antarctica?
Well, we were always rising early. Actually, we had an intercom on the ship, and our safety officer, one of the members of the team, would always wake us up saying wakey wakey through the intercom, which was quite funny. And yeah, it would look really, really different depending on the conditions. So it would depend if we could go out on the boats and even do a shore landing, but we would have our meals, three meals a day together, which was often a really incredible time over meals, because you would have so many in-depth and inspiring and important conversations with people from, yeah, like I said, across the world. And yeah, between those meal times, we'd either do a Zodiac cruise to see wildlife on the smaller boats, and sometimes do a shore landing, and we'd be split into different groups because we couldn't all go at once. And then when we were on the ship, we'd have lectures and workshops by some of the incredible speakers. But I probably miss a lot of detail there, so Zanadi, jump in.
Sure, yeah. I also think another almost a daily occurrence was whale sightings while we were on the ship, but also while we were out on the Zodiac boats. And this is another thing that I found really fun about mealtimes, was that sometimes we would all be together, and over the intercom, we would hear that there was a whale sighting at 11 o'clock outside, and everyone would run to the windows to see if they could get a glimpse of that whale. And that was incredible to just see all the wildlife down in Antarctica.
But I remember being so disappointed, because for the first couple of days, I'd run to the windows and I would miss the whales. But after a couple of days of patience, I started to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I felt so bad. I always was like, Emma, did you see that whale? And she'd be like, no, I missed it. But yeah, it was a daily occurrence, seeing all the incredible wildlife in Antarctica.
Everything sounds so exciting, and I'm pretty sure that you guys would have so much fun in this journey. You definitely would have learned so much and achieved a lot of your goals while you were in this journey. So now, actually, it's time to wrap up. And so, before we just wrap up, would you like to share any green tip for our listeners, or any book recommendations, anything?
Yeah, absolutely. So I really recommend the book All We Can Save, together by Catherine Wilkinson and Ayana Johnson, and some of the Arctic Angels have been involved with that as well. It's got contributions from incredible female leaders around the world. Another thing is, for people very interested in the Arctic, I recommend Arctic Today for Arctic news. And then I also, of course, want to mention the Global Choices website, which is www.globalchoices.org. And there's a resource library there to learn more about the polls. And as a network, we also have speakers and solution sessions. So getting involved with the Arctic Angels and Global Choices.
Yeah, I can also jump in with some things. I think, as I was mentioning earlier about climate education, I think that it's super important for kids to have those resources. So I co-authored a book called A Kid's Book About Climate Change, which is for kids 5+ to learn about climate change. And then there's also a podcast that pairs with it called 1.5, a kids podcast about climate justice for 10 to 15 year olds to learn about climate justice. And if you're looking to, you know, get more into activism, one of Zero Hour's co-founders, Jamie Margolin, has a book called Youth to Power, Your Voice and How to Use It. And that is a really great book to learn about activism, getting involved in protesting, and joining the climate movement.
Thank you so much for all those recommendations. And I would again like to thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. And I'm pretty sure that our listeners would enjoy listening to this podcast, because it was kind of very different, wherein you were sharing your experiences of your journey. And definitely, I personally have learned a lot, and our listeners would definitely learn a lot from this podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us. It's been lovely.